Thank you, Molly. Good afternoon. It's great to see such an amazing turnout for this session, and I want to invite those that are in the back, please feel comfortable to come get in a chair while I'm speaking versus sitting on the floor if you'd like. It's no problem on my account. As Molly mentioned, I am with ASTO, the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. We are a 501c3 membership organization for the chief public health officers in each of the states, territories, and D.C. And Dr. Dwelly, one of our members from North Dakota, is in the audience here today. And Mark Horton, the former commissioner in California, is here as well. So I wanted to acknowledge them quickly. We are a member organization of the National Board of Public Health Examiners. And our members are strong supporters of a credentialed, qualified workforce. So I'm here somewhat in that capacity, but I think I'm also more here as a member of the charter class, as Molly mentioned, to talk to you all about maintaining your certification once you follow Amar's great advice and pass the exam. So why should you maintain your certification? First question, who here has already passed the exam? Okay, so it's more people getting ready to take the exam. But once you pass the exam, I'd say there's the personal level of why you should maintain it. You've already invested the time and energy to study, so you would want to maintain that credential and maintain the recognition that comes with being certified in public health. There's the recognition for the organization. The National Board is trying to meet credentialing standards with the National Commission for Certifying Agency Standards for the betterment of the profession so that more of the workforce maintains the credential, and as time goes on, a greater percentage of the workforce is credentialed in public health. And I would say, most importantly for the public, that the goal of this is to ensure a competent workforce to deliver quality public health to all of the citizens of America and all of the residents of the world. So those are sort of the benefits of staying certified. What are the requirements? Step one is to earn 50 hours of CEUs every 2 years, and I will talk a little bit later about when that starts based on when you pass the exam. And then step two, which we're not going to talk much about today, possibly in Q&A, is complete the reassessment that's being considered. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about what counts as CEUs, because 50 hours probably sounds like a lot to you, especially if you're thinking about all the studying you're going to have to do to take the exam in the first place. The first thing is, whatever you're doing, whatever type of activity it is, it has to address the domains that are in the certifying exam. And you've seen them both in Molly's and Amar's presentation, but they're the same ones, the domain-specific things that you learned in public health school, biostat, epi, et cetera, and the cross-cutting priorities, leadership, policy, professionalism, so on and so forth. There's certainly activities you could do that would address multiple domains. So, for example, if you took a course called the Psychology, Biology, and Politics of Food, you're probably going to get some epidemiology, you're probably going to get some environmental health sciences, some social behavioral sciences, and some policy within that. The other requirement is that the activity must be scholarly, but there's extraordinary flexibility in what counts in that regard. You could, for example, attend a conference like APHA. You could present at a conference like APHA or any of other similar professional organization. You can author a funded public health grant related to one of the domains. You could author a funded journal article, book, chapter in a book. You could edit a publication that's related to the domains. You could complete an internship or field study related to one of the domains. You could do an online course through Train or your state or local health department or a local university that's related to a domain. You can read peer-reviewed journal articles. You can be a grant reviewer or manuscript reviewer. You could be an item writer for the CPH exam, so there's that opportunity. Or you could teach a course related to public health. So there's tons of types of activities that count towards maintaining your certification. And NBPHE really encourages you to get a diversity of activities and content within those domains. I, to prepare for this, went online to sort of look at what my CEUs have been so far, and I probably took Molly's approach of building on what I'm already strong in versus addressing the areas where I didn't score as well on the exam. My areas that I've worked in so far are health policy and management, diversity and culture, leadership, professionalism, program planning, and systems thinking. My score was the weakest at epidemiology and biostatistics. So I'm going to use my last 5 hours that I still need before December 31 to cover those areas. So now the big question is, when do I start? When are those 50 hours due? So for those of us that are 2008 sitting up here, and any of you in the audience, they're due in a couple of months on December 31st. So how many of you, our cohort of 2008, already have your 50 hours? Oh, very good. I think I'm probably the lone cohort of 2008 that still needs five. For anyone, I mean, first of all, great that you're here. You can probably get a lot of your CEUs here at the conference, even in this session, for example. The cohort of 2009, yours started earlier this year, and they're due at the end of next year. 10 starts this January, and you have 2 years to complete them. 11 starts in 13, and those of you who take the exam this February, yours would start then in 14 and be due at the end of 15. So pretty easy to, and then every 2 years you have to re-up your 50 hours. So what happens if you don't complete your 50 hours? We don't know. We haven't passed that stage yet. But theoretically, this could be me or you sitting back in the Prometrics testing center retaking the exam, which you don't want if you've already completed once. So just a quick recap of what counts towards CEUs. These are the three principles to maintain your certification. You have to do a learning activity that addresses the domains. It has to be scholarly, and the board encourages you to have a diversity both of content and modality. So now we're going to kind of transition to how you keep track of all of this. How do I calculate the length of my CEUs to report to the board? It's real-time calculations. So for example, this session is eligible for CPH CEUs. And it's an hour and a half long session. Assuming we use up all of our time with presentation and Q&A, you would get an hour and a half. You do not count time for housekeeping announcements or breaks, etc. So 2 weeks ago, my organization had our annual conference, and the opening session offered CEUs. The session was 2 hours, but about half hour of that is welcome to Portland. We're so glad to see you, housekeeping announcements, and a couple of awards. So that session did not count for a full 2 hours. It counted, I believe, for about an hour and a half. Do CPH CEs roll over? This is unfortunately not AT&T. There are no rollover minutes or hours. So whatever, all of you overachievers that have already completed your 50 hours, you can't carry forward extras to the next cycle period. Some questions about what sorts of things count. Do academic courses count? The answer is yes, they do. And this is actually, if you are enrolled in some sort of graduate work or just auditing a class, this is a way to get a lot of hours. Because if your class meets, for example, 3 times a week for 10 weeks, that's potentially 30 hours. But again, I want to remind you all, if you have like a day spent towards learning the online course management system or overview of the syllabus or housekeeping announcements, those sorts of things don't count towards your time. A lot of people ask, what if I'm teaching the course? Does the academic course still count? The answer is yes, in some cases. It counts the first time you lay out the curriculum, basically. And it doesn't count if you teach 2 sections of a class. You don't get to count both sets of hours, only 1 set of hours. Does my state APHA affiliate meeting count? Probably yes. Think about those 3 criteria. Does it address one of the domains? Is it scholarly? If the answer to those questions are both yes, then probably it counts. Does that webinar I watched last week from the CDC on winnable battles count? The answer is probably yes, again, because it addresses the domains and is scholarly. Do CEUs from other types of professionals count? And the answer here is it depends. The content does have to be public health focused on one of those domains. So a very common one that there's a lot of overlap with are medical and nursing. And if you were taking a CME course on emergency tracheotomies, that would not count. But if you were taking a CME course on evacuating a hospital in an emergency, that probably would count as a public health preparedness activity. So consider that in the context of, does it match with one of the domains that are listed there on all of our slides? Do I have to buy CPHCEs? No, in most cases you don't, but nothing is free. Everything at least costs your time. I did go through a whole variety of ways you can earn CEUs by writing grants, editing documents, publishing documents. All of those things may or may not cost money. Most of them cost time. I, for example, all of my CEUs have been earned doing things mostly related to my work, and fortunately for me, my employer pays for me to attend things like this conference and that sort of thing. So you have a good chance that most of your CEUs can be earned just based on your time and effort. How do I report my CEUs? It's a self-report honor system, and NBPHE has an awesome form on their website that actually helps you stay completely on track and make sure you're hitting the domains. It asks you to select what type of activity, so you can really see what diversity you have and how far you have come or how far you have to go. You should keep records about what CEUs you're completing, and NBPHE is creating an online transcript form in the future, but right now it's an Excel spreadsheet that you download from their site, and I'll show you where in a few minutes. What evidence should I keep in case I'm audited? Audited sounds very serious, like taxes. There are lots of things. If you do the CEUs here or at the AFTO meeting, for example, you'll get a certificate from the provider. You could also keep an agenda if it's not that formal of a meeting. If you use a grant, for example, you could use your notice of grant award and or your actual written application. Anything that sort of proves that you did what you said you did. If you do a field study or internship, your mentor or preceptor's evaluation of you or your notes from what you learned, that sort of thing. How do I turn in my transcript? Right now you don't. As I said, it's entirely on our system. You download it and you keep it on file until NBPHE asks for it. So it's very simple. There are two types of CE at this time. There's that which is pre-approved by the board, and there's that which is certificate justified. You justify it on your own. There are currently five organizations. There are those five partner organizations that were on Molly's slide earlier that they're pre-approved to provide CEUs, and they have already worked with the National Board of Public Health Examiners to ensure that what they're providing does address the domains, is scholarly, and meets the criteria. So you can take courses, go to meetings, etc., from any of those organizations, and you'll know that you're good in that regard. The certificate justified are some of those activities that you would do on your own, like reading a peer-reviewed journal, writing a journal article, or going to a meeting from a different organization that's not one of those five that are members and pre-approved. There are some pending changes related to certificate justified versus pre-approved CPHCEs. These are not in effect yet. This is just to warn you, so those of you getting prepared for 2014 or beyond can think about this. There will be in the future limits to the number of certificate justified hours out of your 50 that you can have. And I believe the proposed limits are 10 per year. So up to 20 in your two-year period could be certificate justified, and the rest would have to be from a pre-approved provider. These are the five member organizations that are currently pre-approved. They are a great resource for you to find CPHCE activities. I would also recommend joining the CPH LinkedIn and Facebook groups. That's another place to look for activities and even ideas from other CPH colleagues who have found great opportunities. Certainly, given the pending changes to how many CEUs you can get from non-pre-approved providers, there's a need to increase the size of the tent beyond those five organizations. So if you know of a great university or health department or institute that provides online learning or meetings or other sorts of opportunities that we've discussed, please nominate them to be a pre-approved provider so that we can meet the demand of the soon-to-be thousands of CPH, or already thousands of CPH people maintaining their certification. Here is on the publichealthexam.org site where you would download your form, your tracker form. And just a quick last reminder of what counts. It has to meet one of the domains, it has to be scholarly, and we encourage you to have a mix of both content and types of activities. And that's all. Thank you.